Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing F1 the movie, Megan 2.0, and Jurassic World Rebirth. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecca and super producer Craig Stanton. Gentlemen, hello.
Hello.
What's going on, Bill?
Not much, AJ. How was your 4th of July?
No, I'm going to ask you first. You're one of the most patriotic people that I know. I feel like it's your favorite holiday. So you tell me how you spent Independence Day.
I do love America. I spent it, you know, celebrating what made this country great, which is hard work, AJ. And I worked on the 4th of July, as I am wont to do. But I always try to give my team a special treat. And per usual, I performed the Bill Pullman presidential speech from Independence Day, the morning of the shift for the team.
How'd it go? New team too, right at work?
New team, yeah. Day. New audience, which we love as a performer.
Old material, new audience.
Exactly.
How was it received?
It was received well, AJ. The issue is that as that movie continues to age, as time relentlessly progresses, more and more of my staff have never seen it. So now I just look like a crazy person standing
there. They just
think
he's launching some sort of political campaign.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? For those that get it, they get it. And it's a fun time for folks that have to work on the 4th, which is, you know, a tough gig. So yeah, my 4th was working. But around that, besides that shift, I did get to spend some time on the Cape. Wow. So that was great. The classic Americana 4th of July on the Cape.
A few questions. Was your Cape outfit was it like a Tommy Hilfiger inspired? Were you going more Ralph Lauren? Were you going more like bespoke, like a Keel James Patrick look, nautical? Like what was your kind of,
were there bracelets involved?
Yeah.
No, I guess Ralph Lauren would be the closest, but I am still working on my Cape attire, to be honest. I'm still kind of building that out.
Okay. You have a pair of Sperry's boat shoes?
I do.
Okay. So you're kind of there. You're working on it. Look,
I'm getting there.
You're new to the Cape game.
Yeah.
You're going to get there.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs. I'm figuring it out.
Sure. Yeah. I thought when you, because you're the most patriotic person and I thought, you know, how you're going to spend 4th of July, I thought you were going to get home from work, like crack a Budweiser and just go on the dark web and find, you know, photos of like the Operation Neptune Spear when they killed Bin Laden and really, you know, enjoy the behind the scenes look at killing the most infamous terrorist in the entire world.
Geronimo. No, that I was able to scratch that itch with that documentary we watched a couple weeks
good.
Ago.
Okay.
What about you? What about you? What do you do?
I am. When you have two kids, and there's a smaller kid and an older kid, there's a little bit of jealousy there, right? And the older kid, James, wanted some attention. So I took him down to the Cape also for a night and a beach day the next day. I'll tell you what.
Nice.
Spending like $10,000 to go to Disney was the dumbest thing when you could just stay at like a flea bag motel down the Cape with a pool, and they're the most excited they've ever been in their entire life.
Just as happy. Yep.
Oh my God. So yeah, we had a lot of time together. We went to the beach. We got ice cream afterwards. Like it was just a good time.
Yeah. That Cape ice cream hits different.
It sure does. And then on Sunday, we went to, in the downtown area that I live, there's a, they do a carnival every year, 4th of July. So we rounded out the all Americana holiday weekend with a carnival, which my God, hours of people watching. Oh my God. I got swindled by a carny
of
to
course.
Play carny games. Oh my God. The ultimate swindle.
You're trying to throw a ball at the milk jugs? What'd you do?
It was
ring
basketball.
Toss?
Oh. But she gets the kid involved because she knows I'm trying to win a prize for James.
Yep.
So I won the first time and she's like, wait, do you want one of the bigger stuffed animals? And he's like, of course I do, you fucking idiot. And she's like, well, that's another $20. And I was like, God damn it.
She gotcha.
Yeah. So $40 for a stuffed animal, alien. But yeah, it was overall a good time. Also, Joey Chestnut back in the winner's circle, Nathan Hot Dog Eating Competition winner again.
Nature is healing.
Yep. The one of the greatest athletes of all time came back to Coney Island and put on a fucking clinic for the folks. 70 and a half hot dogs. So my question for you boys is how many dogs could you punish before you threw up?
Oh, I mean, I do like three easy on a regular barbecue. Sure. Like regular event.
The trifecta glizzy is easy.
Easy. I don't know. Maybe 3x. Maybe I could get to 10 and then I'd probably hurl. I don't know.
That was going to be, I was going to say between 10 and a dozen. I think I could do.
Sure.
I think once I got to a Baker's, I think I'm just.
That's over.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I'm driving the bus. I'm just grabbing the back of that toilet and praying. Craig, what about you?
I don't want to doubt myself or my abilities, but I don't think I'm cracking double digits. I really don't.
Okay. Really?
Okay. Respect.
Wow.
Because here's the thing. I'm picturing my situation as like, I'm on the stage and it's just like, like right then and that you just mentioned a toilet. Like you're not getting to a toilet, brother. There's like 25,000 people like standing there sweating on Coney Island watching this event. So like the combination of like performance anxiety and like nerves, your like stomach's kind of tight. You're like not really hungry and you're just jamming glizzies down your gullet. Like that's not a winning combination at all. I think I'm lucky to get to double digits.
Wow.
Okay. That's fair.
Well, okay.
AJ, you watching anything?
I did. I was going to watch Sinners, but I didn't. Took a little left turn.
Missed out.
Watch The Sound of Music.
What?
Wow.
Talk about a left turn.
Jeez. Yeah, now, seriously.
Turned all the way to Bavaria.
The reason I did that is I listened to a podcast called What Went Wrong. I've talked about it on the show before. But basically, they break down the ins and outs, how specific movies got made. So each episode they tackle a movie. So one of the recent episodes they talked about The Sound of Music. And I was so like enamored by this episode. I was like, you know what? Now that I know all this stuff, I'm gonna go back and watch The Sound of Music. And it's on Disney Plus right now. The high def scan and remaster is phenomenal. It's just really good movie/musical, and I loved every second of it. And also James was super into it too, which is great. I'm sorry, but I rewatched The Sound of Music.
No need to be sorry. It's a great pick. I have seen that at once, maybe. Not something I watch regularly by any means. So that might be worth a rewatch, especially if they have like a redone restoration of it. It could be interesting.
What's the runtime we're looking at?
A little over.
We don't get into the 3-hour range on this one, do we?
In my memory, Sound of Music is the longest movie on earth.
252.
It's like from my childhood. 252. That's long for the time period.
Yeah, that sounds right. And the pacing of those movies back in the day are significantly different.
it's not good. But it's just one of those feel good movies. I know Hannah grew up watching it a ton, so we all kind of watched it together, and it was the kids were in and out, but I think overall it's a hell of a film. And like I said, the remaster high definition scan and how they did that on Disney Plus looks absolutely phenomenal. Like it's really, I forgot how beautiful that movie looks in a shot. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Nice.
Hell of a rewatch. We got a lot of news to talk about.
Yeah, AJ, let's just get right into it. What's in the news?
All right, ready? The New York Times recently put out their list of the top 100 movies of the 21st century, which they created by polling more than 500 filmmakers, stars, and influential film fans. Their top three ended up being There Will Be Blood, Mulholland Drive, and Parasite, taking the top spot. There's a lot to unpack here, Bill, but let's start with this. What do you think of their list? How many did you watch? And how would yours look any different?
I think the list is actually solid. I've had a number of different people send me this, so I knew we had to dig into it in an episode. And I thought it was a pretty good list. I'll be honest. Now, I had seen 80 out of the 100. One of the cool things
80?
Yes. 80%. Hey. Thank you. Thank you. I felt pretty good about that.
It's a high number. I'll be honest. I was expecting higher, but it's a high number.
Be a lot better if it was 100.
I know. But some of the, I mean, we're talking about 25 years of movies, including a bunch of foreign films and stuff that I might not, I didn't get to.
Oh, so foreign films don't matter?
It's not that they don't matter, it's that they're harder to see, AJ, especially in the beginning part of those 25 years when there wasn't as much streaming and access. Anyway, I saw 80 out of the 100, and I really liked the list overall. I thought they did a good job with their picks. I would obviously rearrange the list, but I don't know that there were any like real major material additions that I would make or things that I thought got like snubbed. Like everything on there, I was nodding along with. And you know it's a good list when the director that is most represented is Christopher Nolan had the most movies on the list with 5. So, you know, they're really speaking my language with that one. So I have like a rearrangement of how I would do the top, which I'll get to later. But how many did you see and what was your initial reaction?
I mean, I thought it was a pretty solid list. I got 58, which I'm okay with. That's over half, you know. I mean, it's nothing, you know, they're not going to make a parade for me or anything, but I feel like it's better than the average moviegoer, which I was going to ask Craig, what's your number? So we can kind of like, we can kind of see how everything kind of stacks up.
So that your number can look better and more respectable.
Yes, yes, thank you.
I'm coming in low at 28. Not good, but you know me, I'm not a movie guy. I'm just here to press the buttons and edit the show.
Yeah.
But let's look at it that way. Like a quarter, a half, and over three quarters, I feel like is a pretty good, you know, I don't know how the stat term is, but like a pretty good sampling, you know, dispersion.
Yeah. Representation.
Yes. Representation. Okay. So what would you do differently? And this is weird because you're now getting into are you going to try to power rank a power rank?
That's what I attempted to do. And boy, is it difficult.
Craig, what's that term called when you?
Oh, it's a hat on a hat. It's just
a hat. Yep,
a hat on a hat. Duplicative, sure.
And unnecessary.
Yeah. Because no, this is your show, Bill. So power rank the power rank.
Well, so I looked at it and I'm like, okay, what if I made my own top five out of these top 100? Because they did it, and I thought Parasite's a respectable choice, but wouldn't be my number one. Mulholland Drive, I love, but also wouldn't be quite as high for me. And then There Will Be Blood, number three, I also would have really high up. So I started looking at the whole list. I'm like, all right, let me pick my top five. And as I was in no particular order, just like picking what I think could go in my top five, I ended up with a top 16. Like I just couldn't. It's so difficult to parse down from there.
In no particular order? Or is it ranked 1 through 16?
I think I now have at least the 1 through 5 in a decent order.
Okay.
I think I would go, I guess we'll go backwards. I think I would go 5, Interstellar. So I moved that up significantly. 4 would be Moneyball, which I also moved up.
Wow.
3 would be No Country for Old Men.
Okay.
2 would be Zodiac. And my number 1 would be Social Network. If I was trying to pick like fairly objectively, as well as personal preference. Like if I picked like my favorite movie of the 21st century, it's like obviously a different list. So I'm trying to think of the best movies of the 21st century, according to me. I would put Social Network number 1. Then I would go Zodiac, No Country, Moneyball, Interstellar. Then we get into There Will Be Blood, Arrival, Memento, Inception. Like I have a bunch. I mean, it's so hard. It is so hard. You seem perplexed.
Yeah, because I thought of it a little bit different. Because I try to take a little bit of a different, are you looking at it from films that have substantially impacted your life or have changed cinema forever?
Neither. I think movies that are just a phenomenal creation, a phenomenal use of the form of the media. I think The Social Network is a perfect movie.
I'll give you top 5 for that. Can I also add one that I think should be in top 5 that I think they had at 100?
Superbad?
Is Superbad.
That was 100, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a comedy about dick jokes and having sex, but I feel like the impact that it had on the comedy world, like comedy films, is everlasting forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Big shift. Yep.
Yeah. Like, you know, you had the Animal Houses and you had those films and like the Ridgemont Highs of like the, you know, 70s and 80s in the early 90s. But like there was kind of that lull until Superbad came along and everyone was like, holy shit, you can make a really, 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 really funny movie again.
I think that's fair. I mean, it brought back teen comedies and it changed just this the sense of humor of those comedies to meet the times, and added that improvisational feeling to it, like the more like real feeling to it.
Yep.
So yeah, I agree. That could have been higher for sure.
I don't agree with your Moneyball at 4 though.
God, maybe that's my personal bias coming in. I just love that movie so much. I do think it's an outstanding movie, but I also personally love it.
Yeah, I don't think it's top 4 movie of the last 25 years. Okay.
Okay.
Greg, you have any thoughts as a guy who's seen only 28 of them?
And I just did a little fun experiment on the side here while you guys were putting the hat on the hat, which is I was looking at NFL starting quarterback career win percentages as a way to contextualize our percentage of the top 100 list, where AJ's around 60, I'm around 30, and Bill's around 80. So Tom Brady, all-time wins leader in the NFL, has a career win percentage of like 75. So that's like BG numbers.
Yep.
That's solid. That's greatest of all time.
I'll take
it.
I'll take it.
Technically, there are higher win percentage people in the past, but we're not going there. It's Brady. It's over.
Right, Bill's head 60- is not going to fit in the frame of the Riverside window, by the way. Okay. Yeah,
best episode ever. Go on.
60% win percentage. Any guesses? This is the AJ comp.
It's just like
60% NFL like quarterbacks of all time.
Hall of Famer, current broadcaster, decent quarterback, very good quarterback, never won a Super Bowl.
Marino?
Close.
No, it's old.
Loves Jesus.
Oh, Tony Romo?
No, I'm not so sure. Tony Romo loves Jesus. Loves Jesus. Kurt Warner is where we're going with the 60%.
Gosh.
But hey,
he won a Super Bowl, didn't he? Greatest show on turf.
Oh yeah, of course he did. Sorry, I sent you down the wrong path there. Yes, absolutely he did.
Okay.
And I can't find a qualifying quarterback who has at least 100 career starts, I think is the thing, with a lower career win percentage than Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's coming in at 40. I was looking for a 30, but nobody who has that low of win percentage would start 100 games.
They wouldn't start.
I'll take Fitzpatrick. AJ, you get Kurt Warner, and Bill, you get the Brady Award.
Okay.
Now, there's a couple. I think you're missing a few there, Bubba. Steve Young was 68%. Josh Allen was 68%.
Whoa, 68? 68? You just gifted yourself 10 more percentage points.
I was 58. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, I gifted you two. Now you gifted yourself 10.
Shit. Okay. Well,
hey, this has been QB talk.
Who are you, like Geno Smith?
I don't know, man. You'd have to get into the underqualifying guys.
Yeah. All right, Bill, what else we got?
All right. Also, big news, AJ. Denis Villeneuve is officially set to direct the next James Bond film for Amazon MGM Studios.
Wild card.
The casting of the lead role of James Bond, however, is still underway. There continue to be rumors that Tom Holland could be an early favorite, with the assumption that they want a younger actor. Jacob Elordi and Aaron Taylor Johnson's names both also continue to pop up. What do you think about Denny taking over this beloved franchise, and who's your top pick to wear the tuxedo?
Two things. I love everything about this. Period. Sure. Second thing, I'm a little concerned about the legacy of old Denis here. And this is why. His last, if you put Dune into one movie, his last three films and now his fourth film are not original. They're not original content. They're all IPs. You have James Bond, right? You have Dune.
Yep.
You have Blade Runner.
Oh, yep.
And you could make the argument that Arrival was based on a short story as well, adapted from a story.
Okay.
is the dude going to get back to the Sicario prisoners days where he's like directing content and stories that are brand new?
I have heard that concern as well. I saw a couple think pieces that said like, this is a great for us, but bad for Denny, just in general. Cause it will, you know, if this movie does well, which knowing his track record, it will, like he could be roped in for another 2-3. These movies take years to make given their complexity. Like is that he's already working on finishing up Dune 3. And yeah, so that, like you said, that would make him much more of a just a blockbuster filmmaker versus the independent artiste that we all fell in love with to get him where he is.
Which, I mean, like, again, great for us, bad for him. I have no doubt that he is going to make a very good film, right?
Yeah. There's no way he won't.
Yeah. Now, the thing is who's he going to get to do the DP work, right? I think he's worked with Roger Deakins in the past. Roger Deakins has also done a Bond movie. I think that would be sick to bring him back.
That'd be awesome.
For this next kind of iteration. As far as who's wearing the tuxedo, I am a fan of Aaron Taylor-Johnson. Always have been. Always will be. I think he's a good mix of brawn and acting chops. Tom Holland, you said, was thrown out there. I just think he's, in the world of Bond, a little too green. I don't think I could ever take him seriously. And if he was, I feel like they'd go more of the comedic self-deprecation route than rather like the, you know, this man is on a mission to save the world.
Yeah.
And I don't, in my head, that is not Tom Holland.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Denny, you know, has batted 1,000 so far. I don't think he's made a bad movie. Love him as a director. Love his vision. Love the look of his movies. Can't wait to see how that applies to Bond. Fresh start for the character and the franchise. Always a good time. The best Bond movies for me, my two favorite Bond movies were new Bonds in their first movies, GoldenEye and Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. So I always love the first of a reboot. I like Aaron Taylor-Johnson as well, particularly after seeing him in Bullet Train and then again in Craven, which again, Craven's not a good movie, but he is the best part. And there's like one or two scenes where he gets to have like a certain cockiness to him and swagger that you would expect him to have with Bond. And he pulls it off incredibly well. So I love Aaron Taylor-Johnson for it. Tom Holland, I also do not see in the role. So I get nervous when I keep seeing that name come up. Jacob Elordi is an interesting one. I feel like what could be cool, even though they would never do this, is he looks to me very similar to Pierce Brosnan and Pierce Brosnan's Bond. And I wonder if they did like a cross-cutting of like young Brosnan's Bond with Elordi and then bring Brosnan in to play his Bond as an older veteran.
That would
be super cool if they could pull something like that off. But I don't see that happening. I'm very excited about it. Back to Nolan for a second. There was a lot of rumors that Nolan was the initial person they went to, but he demanded final cut of his film, as he does with all his films, and whoever owns Bond now, Amazon, refused to give final cut, and so he walked. And Denny was willing to make that concession.
Wow.
So there's always now going to be like a what if. I mean, Nolan could always come back around to it 5-10 years from now. Who knows? But I'm excited.
You think Chris called up Barbara Broccoli and was like, "These assholes,
probably,
these goddamn assholes." And she's like, "Chris, I told you, Chris, I've been telling this for years. They're assholes." And he's like,
"Yeah, well, he had a caller while she was on a beach somewhere in her new villa from that sale to Amazon.
She's yelling at the kitchen staff that green juice didn't have enough celery in it.
Yeah. Anyway, I think Denny's going to do great. I'm very, very curious what happens with the casting. That's the big question mark.
Okay. Let's go on to Should I Go See It? As Bill said, we're going to be talking about three films today. The first is F1, the movie. I don't know why it's called F1, the movie and not just F1, but here we are. A Formula One driver comes out of retirement to mentor and team up with a younger driver. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes, absolutely. This is a summer movie, crowd pleaser to the extreme. like in a good way. I loved it. And to preface this entire review, I don't really know anything about Formula One. Never watched it. Never watched Drive to Survive or whatever that show was. Going in completely fresh. To me, it's just a sports movie. It's just a racing movie. So take that for whatever that means, because I do know that there are some like hardcore F1 people that apparently are not thrilled with the depiction or whatever, but whatever. For me, it worked well. So to give you the setup, Brad Pitt stars as a former F1 driver whose career is cut short by injury. And since then, he's just kind of done racing here and there, jobs for hire, never got committed to going back to it. And then his old teammate, Javier Bardem, has a fledgling racing team with a rookie driver. And as the owner of the team, the board is prepared to oust him as the owner of the team if he doesn't improve in the back half of the season, because they have like no points at halfway through.
Okay.
And so he goes to Pitt, his old buddy, and says he needs him to come back as the veteran that he can trust to come run this team. And Pitt reluctantly agrees for the one last job, and we're off to the races, figuratively and literally.
Okay.
So that's the setup, which is great. I mean, come on. Can't go wrong. This movie is directed by Joseph Kosinski, who made Top Gun Maverick. And honestly, it's hard not to compare the two, because narratively, there's some similarities and the movie looks very similar. A lot of the tech that they use to get cameras into the cockpits of those jets carries over to them putting cameras on the F1 cars. And so a lot of the just feels like a similar look. I wouldn't say this movie is as good as that one. It doesn't have the same stakes. It doesn't have that kind of lightning in a bottle that Top Gun Maverick did.
Okay.
But it's still a damn fun sports movie. It's just really, really good.
Few questions.
Sure.
The movie looked beautiful.
Yes.
Here's my problem. The amount of product placement that I've seen in the advertisements makes me want to throw up. How bad is it?
It's significant. But I feel like that, just like racing, like it's realistic in that way. And it kind of just fades into the background by the time you get into the movie. But yeah, there's patches everywhere. There's just logos everywhere. They're using all the real stuff. It's a lot. Besides the made-up racing team that they created, everything else is real, including the other teams. It's all real.
Okay. Second question.
Yes.
Is this just top? We've been talking about this, but is this just Top Gun Maverick on the ground? Is this like Top Speed Maverick?
Not quite. It's a little different. But as far as the action sequences and the racing sequences, they are just as heart pounding and amazing to look at. It's very real, very practical. There's a lot of hidden CG, but there's onboard cameras that put you right in the action. And what's cool is, similar to Maverick, the actors are actually in the vehicles. In Maverick's case, someone else is flying it in like the background behind them or whatever, but they're still in them. In this case, Brad Pitt's actually driving the car. So they have these really cool shots where the camera on the car looking at Brad Pitt and then rotating around to show the rest of the race. So you can tell in one continuous shot, it's still Brad Pitt driving. It's really, really cool.
That's kind of cool.
And then they use, similar to Maverick, they use, when he was doing his like test run, they use sort of on-screen graphics and sort of play-by-play announcers and people on comms to kind of keep the action clear for the audience and set up the right context. I do wish that they adopted the same thing as Gran Turismo, where they have on-screen graphics that like, and specifically like highlight over the car what position they're in, like a video game. But I get that they're not going to do that in a non-video game movie, but it would have been cool. But yeah, I mean, I was in awe of it throughout. Like, it's gorgeous. The whole first act, I just had like a dumb grin on my face, just seeing Brad Pitt be awesome and all these cars do amazing things. It's incredible. It's one of the most expensive movies ever made, but every dollar is up there on the screen. Like, you get it.
What's the worst part of the movie?
So I bumped on a couple things. The length and the repetition of certain story beats, because it's like a good 2.5 hours easy.
Jesus, for a car movie?
Yeah, and there's a couple of story beats that they kind of repeat. So like, if you gave me the raw footage and threw it to Final Cut, I could tighten this thing up by 20 minutes and make just a lean, mean,
first
perfect
of all,
movie.
He's a goat movie watcher. He's now part of the ASPC. He's going to be a fucking editor.
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
They also made the movie so realistic to F1 in a way that sacrificed some of the drama of a standard sports movie. So like, I appreciate the subversion of expectation and the commitment to reality, but I kind of missed some of the normal beats you get in a sports movie. So like, for instance, they go out of their way not to have any villains in the movie. There's no like bad guy team. There's no
Iceland.
Yeah, there's none of that. They mention a bunch of famous racers by name and they like race up against them. But they don't, they're not characters. They don't ever like meet them. They don't ever fight on the track. They don't ever like interact with them. So there's no real bad guys, which is actually similar to Top Gun Maverick. It's just like a nondescript foreign country. They don't actually want to name any bad guys,
sure,
which is fine. But when you're in a sports movie, it's kind of nice to have that foil to
go. Actually be my last question, so I'm glad you brought it up. Okay, so no bad guy. The only bad guy is that 6 inches between your ears, pretty much.
Yeah, it's about the difficulty of the sport. Yeah. And because they were also making it realistic, the stakes aren't quite as clear or exciting throughout. Like normally in a sports movie, it's like leading up to one big race that they have to win or whatever. In this case, it's there's a series of races and they're trying to eke out some points so that the team doesn't lose its owner. So it's not okay. It's not quite as like edge of your seat. Here we go. Final lap against the Red Bull villain team that we got to beat to whatever. Like they don't really set that up quite the same way. So again, it's more realistic to an actual season of F1, but it's sacrifices some of the fun of a sports movie. It's kind of a small quibble. It's more of a personal preference. I thought the movie was incredible and I highly recommend it to everybody.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
Is that it? Period.
Yeah, that's it.
Go watch F1.
It's a great time.
It has to be
in the theaters. I saw it in Dolby. Highly recommend Dolby or IMAX. It's shot with IMAX cameras for the action sequences. You can in Dolby, it's all about the sound, so you can like feel the engine roar. Like, yeah, it's a theater experience, 100%.
Okay, love it. Next movie is Mathegan 2.0. Let's make this one quick because it looks so fucking awful. According to IMDb.com, 2 years after Mathegan's rampage, her creator Gemma resorts to resurrecting her infamous creation in order to take down Amelia, the military-grade weapon who was built by a defense contractor who stole Mathegan's underlying tech. Bill, should I go see it?
No.
Yes.
Nope.
He said no.
No.
How bad is this movie, dude?
Oh, it's awful.
What are we doing?
It's awful. So the first movie was like a little mini phenomenon. Like they caught lightning in a bottle. It was a schlocky horror comedy with a killer robot doll. Captured people's imaginations. It was campy and fun. I gave it a yes. And now they make a sequel after the surprise success of the original. And they decide to switch genres. And they turn this into a sci-fi action comedy with basically the narrative bones of Terminator 2. Because now Megan, who was the villain in the first movie, is now the hero that must protect us from an even worse robot threat. It's Terminator 2. Like, that's the setup. And it does not work at all. And first of all, aesthetically, it captures none of the magic of the first. Because when they rebuild Megan in a new body, she demands to be taller. And so now instead of being a killer doll, she's just a like life-size stunt performing woman with a latex mask on. Like the character is like no longer has any sort of interesting charm. It's just a stunt performer. The fight scenes are nothing to write home about. It's not particularly funny. The only like goofy out-of-pocket lines they already put in all the ads. None of it works. I will give some credit. Some of the performances are pretty good. Like they give Allison Williams more to do this time and has a few fun moments. Jermaine Clement shows up and has like a really funny scene.
Oi.
The MVP of the movie is Aristotle Athari. He was a new character. He partners with Allison Williams in the movie. And we've been a big fan of him since Molly and Max in the Future, which is one of my favorite movies. So I've always loved his voice and his line delivery, and he's great in this. Like he knows the movie he's in and he delivers some great deadpan humor. So he was great to see. I like love seeing him in a big movie, like good for him. But otherwise, the movie's too long, tonal whiplash left and right. It's not funny enough. The action's not good enough. The story is a mistake. The genre swap is a genuinely bad idea. And I could not wait for it to end. Thus concludes my notes about Megan 2.0.
I keep on looking at the trailer and I'm trying not to laugh because it looks like the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, it is that. And like there are times where it wants you in on that joke, and then there are times where it's playing it serious, and like it doesn't get it. Like there's no overarching vision to it, I don't think. I think it's unfortunately just like a collection of scenes.
Ugh, gross. Well, that was Mathegan 2.0.
Skip it.
All right, Bill, the last film is Jurassic World Rebirth. According to IMDb.com, 5 years post-Jurassic World Dominion, an expedition braves... Oh my God, what a horrible grammatic. Okay, 5 years post-Jurassic Park, World Dominion, whatever. There's more DNA from dinosaurs, and now we're going to figure out why Scarlett Johansson's here. Okay, Bill, should I go see it?
No, you should not.
What are we doing? Can we save? Why can't we save this? Why can't we just say, you know what? We fucked up. There's dinosaurs all over the world. Like they're in Central Park. It's rated R and everyone starts dying. And now it's like Turok the Dinosaur Hunter. And we need to kill. Everyone gets a bow and arrow and like a Uzi and like a buck 110 knife. And you go kill a, you know, for every hide you get, you get $1,000 from the U.S. government. How difficult is that?
That would be a much more interesting movie. Although it's interesting you say that because this movie actually in the opening does have a brontosaurus that gets stuck in power lines in Central Park.
Jesus Christ.
But that's the only time they have dinosaurs in the city. So anyway, to start
walking
here.
In.
What the fuck is with this electricity? I got a long neck.
So to start, the setup for this movie, to your point, it's a greedy pharma company, obviously, that wants dino. Yeah, true. They want dino blood samples because they're making heart disease medicine, and dinosaurs had really big hearts, AJ. So,
oh, my God. All right, folks, on to Netflix and Bill. What are we watching?
No, you got to let me finish.
No. We're done here. We're good. We're done. Like, awesome.
No. There's so much more to say. So they want to get tissue samples so that they can make medicine for heart disease to make trillions of dollars.
The hearts are really big, you see.
Right, exactly.
Does no one realize that the hearts are big because the animals are fucking enormous?
Yeah. So they bring in a scientist played by Jonathan Bailey, and they bring in a former special ops person played by Scarlett Johansson, so that they can go to the island where the dinosaurs still live to get samples from the three biggest dinosaurs, air, land, and sea. Because they had the biggest hearts, obviously.
Yeah, it's like a video game quest. Okay.
It is very video gamey in that way. So in this version of the Jurassic universe, the dinosaurs have been out in the world since, I don't know, the first park, I guess. But they mostly, the opening text tells us that the dinosaurs died, most of them, from climate change and disease. So the only ones left living in the wild are on islands on the equator, which is a point made at least three times in the first 10 minutes due to shitty exposition and text on screen.
Okay.
And so they go to these islands, action ensues, and we spend our time cross-cutting between the mission and a family that gets kind of caught up in the whole thing trying to survive. We just cross-cut between
the
two. But
why are they there? Are they like locals?
They were on a boat that gets knocked over by the sea monster, and they kind of end up on the island as well.
Why are they on a boat knowing that there's massive megalodons in the water?
Well, the dinosaur comes out further than it usually does. They get blown off course. You got to see the movie, AJ, if you really want to know that much.
Well, that's not going to happen. Okay, keep going.
So, to be fair, I'll give a couple positives. There's some nice visuals. Some of the action sequences have some good moments. The finale was actually pretty strong. That's kind of it. Because the movie still feels like a whole bunch of ones and zeros. Like, nothing's real. It's painfully obvious when they shoot on soundstage, especially like the rock climbing sequences. There's not much in terms of stakes. They create just enough characters that you know which ones are going to live and which ones are going to be dino fodder based on how many lines they get in Act 1. Like, oh, this person's going to die. The characters are all super bland, too. And like, I don't know if it's just that Sam Neill and Laura Dern are better actors than everybody else, or if it's the script, or if it's both. But it just feels like none of the characters in any dinosaur movie since the original Jurassic Park have any heart or character at all. And the whole movie just feels weightless.
Do you think Michael Crichton, like at night, like thinks about like the cig that's in his bedside dresser? Or do you think he's too much like Scrooge McDuck just diving into wads of money? Like, where do you think he is?
He's probably moved on.
Yeah, you think they ruined my baby? Or do you think he's like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, I have millennial generational wealth going on right now.
Yeah, big time. And he's written so many other books since then and that other things that have become adapted. I think he's probably moved on with his life.
Okay.
But it's, you know, for some people that want like mindless summer blockbuster, like, sure, I guess. I think we deserve better at this point. So, yeah, it's not good. I will say it is better than some of the other Jurassic World sequels, but it's still not good. And to your point, I am still upset with this entire franchise for teasing a movie at the end of Fallen Kingdom where the dinosaurs are loose and need to be cleaned up by immediately following it up with a new movie that begins with, well, we captured most of the loose dinosaurs. And this movie is like, well, most of the loose dinosaurs died by climate change. It's like, where's the movie with the loose dinosaurs? Like, I don't understand why you're not telling us that story.
We're never going to get that. We're never going to get it.
They even made a short film of a Triceratops on a campground. And it was like, oh, where is this movie?
Bill, you're do you not remember my opening diatribe? Yes.
Yes. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%.
We're never going to get it. We'll talk about it offline. Okay. So this movie's trash. It's garbage. They've ruined basically the most beloved the Lost World and the other one that came after wasn't that good either. I mean, Jurassic Park 1 was and is still one of the best films of all time. And ever since that, they have just beaten that horse and dragged it through the mud and just they killed it. It's dead.
It is now just soulless CG slop.
Fuck.
Is what this series has become.
All right, Craig, Netflix and Bill.
When are we going to get the Jurassic Park movie where there's a velociraptor who like gets a job on Wall Street and is trying to blend in?
Ooh.
Let me tell you.
Velociraptor in a trench coat goes to work in the private sector.
That would be good. But that's what this franchise needs desperately to me.
Yes, I agree.
But a velociraptor in a Brooks Brothers suit?
No. Well, that would be great. But it needs a genre shakeup. Like, because they're just stuck in this PG-13 family summer movie slump. And like, it's on pace to do with one of the biggest global openings ever. So they're just going to keep doing it. So this is not going to change. But what I would like to see is you get the director that did Alien Romulus. And you give him free reign. Or you get Robert Eggers.
No, you get Dan.
And you do like a dark, suspenseful. Yeah, Trachtenberg, sure. I want a dark, suspenseful, R-rated horror movie out of this IP.
Which is what...
Or to your...
Wait, which is what... If you read the original Jurassic Park, that is exactly what Jurassic Park 1, the book, is. It is a violent horror book about dinosaurs coming back to life and killing everybody.
Yeah. They need to make that, or they need to make it, like you said, like more of an action thrill ride. Make it like Aliens 2, where a team of SEALs needs to go in and eliminate a raptor nest or something. Like, they need to shake up the genre, because I just feel like this summer adventure blockbuster for the family is just so stale.
Yeah. Or do Pterodactyl tries to make it as a real estate agent in suburban Detroit.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that works too. We'll take it.
Netflix and
Bill.
What are we watching?
I finished The Bear season 4.
So did I.
I have many thoughts.
You go first. Wait, first, Craig, did you finish watching it?
Okay, well, we have to specify spoilers, not just for my sake, but for the sake of the audience.
I will not spoil.
Okay.
Story-wise, I will not spoil.
Yeah, this is going to be...
I have not finished this season, so I appreciate it personally, and I think our audience would appreciate it as well.
This is going to be really difficult.
Proceed with the intention of not spoiling, and with the magic of editing, we'll make sure that that's the case.
This is going to be really difficult for your ears, Craig. I'm going to try to do my best.
I'm not going to do any story specifics. I will just say,
yes,
it has been renewed for season 5. Okay. So there's that. I feel like this show has become extremely repetitive.
Sure.
I find that nothing really happened this season. I honestly am finding the show to be obnoxious at times.
Ooh, baby.
And I really wanted to get back to the craft of the restaurant, because I think the show thrives when it is about competence and showing great people do things they're great at. And that has basically been eliminated from the show by now in favor of yelling and screaming and ad lib and emotional scenes that for me don't really hit. So I didn't love it. And I have more specific thoughts on where they went story-wise, but that's my overarching, is that I watched it, but it was more of a tolerated it than a, God, this is such a fresh, amazing show. Your thoughts?
I'm torn. I'm very torn. Because I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I want to hate this show. But by episode 4 and 5, I was looking at Hannah and I was like, one more, one more, one more.
Yeah.
One more.
Okay. Yep.
And I think that's probably the magic of a few things, is as much as those emotional story beats get a little bit drowning and are very heavy and get us away from the atmosphere of the kitchen, they're still progressing the story in a way that makes you want to understand where this is, or find out where this is going to go, which I think sucks you in, right?
Yeah.
When I saw that it got renewed for season 5, part of me was also like, why? You know, like I was on episode 6 at that point, maybe 5 or 7. And I was like, why? Like, why can't we just, let's wrap it up. We got this. We can do it, folks. Chef. Yes, chef. Right?
Yes, chef.
Right. Fire beef, fire carrots, fire pasta.
Yeah.
You know, like, let's fucking do this. And then you're just like, they couldn't do it. They couldn't land the plane. And they ended in a way that, of course, makes you want more. But to your point, we're verging on beating a dead horse. We're almost there. We're on the crux of that horse just taking another bludgeoned beating to the spine.
There is one thing that I think would, for this show to survive long, like if they don't end it with 5, which they should, if they wanted the show to survive long term, there's one major change they would have to make, but I don't want to say it for potential spoiler reasons. So we'll take it offline.
Text.
But yeah, I just, again, I watched it, I tolerated it. It had, I mean, obviously it's an extremely well-made show and it's well-acted. So there's great scenes throughout. So I'm not saying it's like trash or anything. I'm just saying it is not like my, oh my God, best show on TV type rating anymore.
Okay. What else?
Okay. Last night I finished Squid Game, final season of Squid Game, season 3.
That's still on TV.
That is still on Netflix. And from what I saw in the news, it sounds like it's still a ratings giant for Netflix. People still watching it, myself included.
That's dumb.
So it was a 6-episode final season and it was fine. I don't know. I really think they could have combined and tightened up the stories of season 2 and 3 to just be one season and just have it be, you know, first season is the guy in the Squid Game and then second season is him coming back to get his revenge and like, that's it. I don't know why we need to break it up into 2 parts for this second part. But it was okay. I didn't, again, a show that I basically tolerated to get through. Some of the games were fun. One in particular I thought was really good. And it did have like an interesting ending that I think acts as a handoff to the American remake. Because my understanding is they are doing an American version of this.
I was going to ask you about that.
And they did like a cameo at the end of the show that I assume is like the handoff to this. They have a prominent American actor that I won't spoil because it's kind of a surprise when they show up. So presumably this person will take over for the American show. I don't know. If that's the case, cool. If that's not the case and it was just like a fun cameo to have, then that's really annoying. So we'll see. But yeah, it was okay. It was fine. If you're into Squid Game and you want to see how it ends, for sure, you gotta watch it, obviously. But yeah, not my favorite show by any means.
And in the American version, it'll be interesting because the winner, instead of getting a lump sum cash prize, actually just gets health insurance. So that'll be an interesting twist.
Yeah.
The American audience.
They have to adapt it for sure. And the only other thing that I meant to watch but still have not started is The Gilded Age. I had a whole plan to like get caught up on that by the time we did this podcast and I did not get to. So I have 3 episodes now to catch up on season 3 of that.
Now I need.
But
to,
that's it.
Now I'm never gonna watch the Squid Game. So you need to text me who's the, what's the end of the season three.
Okay. All right. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Leave me out of it because that last season of Squid Game is still on my list.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to discuss when you see it too.
Tickets. What do we got?
Indeed. Tickets. Hey, tickets, guys.
Play the fuck.
Oh, I got sound
play the
that.
Fucking thing.
Jesus. Say, I'm waiting on the audio.
Tickets. Tickets. We got tickets. Here.
Tickets. Here.
Come on. Say what I said with you. Ditch the boyfriend. He'll keep the car running. Hey.
Every time
we have, I have two tickets as of right now.
I have one
Superman.
Ticket. I have one ticket.
AJ's got a ticket. Superman. We're seeing Superman. AJ, go ahead.
We're gonna go see Superman tomorrow on Thursday in IMAX early showing. Fucking Bill special red carpet edition IMAX Somerville.
Oh, spare no expense.
My God, what's a bucket?
It's gonna be great. What's the Superman bucket? Like the popcorn bucket?
I don't know. Is there a bucket?
I don't know.
I got to Google this.
I stopped keeping track of popcorn buckets because it's the dumbest thing. Trend that's happened.
This is not like a I'm just honestly, if someone was like, does Bill collect popcorn buckets? I would say, yes, you do.
Wow. Wow. You think that low of me?
No, you're just a movie. You're like a memorabilia guy.
But I'm also like a minimalist. You know, you've seen my house. Where the hell am I going to put a fucking 18 popcorn buckets?
I don't know. You have 35 empty fucking rooms. Have a popcorn bucket room. You fucking dick. No, there's no. Wait, is there? Oh, it's Crypto holding a little thing, I think.
Is that the dog? I was going to guess the dog.
Sure is. Okay. What else? Did you buy Fantastic Four and you didn't tell me?
I also have tickets to see Fantastic Four First Steps.
Wow, dude. When's that?
That is, when is that? That is Thursday the 24th at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. I think I actually have a second seat for that one.
We'll talk about it offline.
Lot to text about today, AJ.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if Fantastic Four was better than Superman?
That would be interesting.
Not going to happen, but I think it'd be hilarious.
I don't know. I don't know what to predict from Fantastic Four versus I assume I know what I'm getting from a James Gunn movie at this point. Fantastic Four, I mean, all bets are off.
$62 for a popcorn bucket?
Oh.
Yeesh.
You'd be dead if it wasn't for my son David. Look at this thing. Hold on, I just sent you in the chat.
Oh, that's kind of cute though.
That's what I'm saying. You could put put that in your on your coffee table, put a little peanut M&Ms in that.
Ooh, actually, that's not a bad idea, AJ. You might be onto something on that one, but I don't think that would work for most of the popcorn buckets. This one, it could.
Okay. Is that it?
All right. Thank you. That's it. We're moving on. We're ending it. Thank you for listening to this Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to follow on Instagram @ Should I Go See It.